Crowley for the Bush League comments.
People say, oh, Hokie, how can you criticize him? I played this game a long time. I've been around a lot of players. And the reality is you could tell a player who's out there just going through the motions, who's out there just kind of just getting through practice and thinking, I've arrived. I've been around a lot of those players. You have to continue to work on your game. You can't just look and say, I played well last year, and I was the catalyst for this turnaround in my offensive line, and everybody's talking about how great I am. You kind of start licking yourself. That's Coach Tomlin's words, right phrase. You start licking yourself, thinking you're great. And maybe that impacts your preparation, your training in the offseason, and your mentality when you come into training camp, and you're just, hey, I'm good. Every year is a different year. Every year you got to come up with a purpose. Every practice is going with purpose. I read stuff on Twitter and all that. People say, well, Hokie, you know, how can Hokie criticize him? I saw him working after practice. You go out there practice. Some guys stand around and drink Gatorade and talk, and they might do a couple sets. Is he doing it with a purpose? People to criticize me for making a comment like that, I played this game a long time. How many seasons have those guys played?
Oh, I like the last one there. And the comment, I didn't know Tomlin said when a guy was feeling himself or getting too big for his britches that he would start licking himself.
I don't think that's the actual term Mike probably used.
You don't think he's thinking of a cat that's there, like, cleaning itself
not
off?
No, not cleaning its arms. I think you can probably guess.
Yeah. You think it's an oral sex reference?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard not to get sidetracked.
You know what? I gotta be honest. Hokie should have just called Crowley out by name. He should have just said, like, who's that little pipsqueak who called me out? Like, it would have been great content. Craig's listening to us right now.
It still is great content.
It is, but it would have been even better if he'd have just, almost with a chuckle, maybe so it doesn't get too heated, but who's that little pipsqueak calling me out?
You know why I think Hoke validated at least some of his criticism there? Because it sounds like it's less of an axe to grind when he says that Jones was the catalyst for their turnaround last year. He is giving the guy praise for something. If he tried to downplay Jones's insertion into the lineup last year and didn't want to give him credit for that, then I might think he's just an anti-Broderick Jones guy. Clearly, he thinks Jones is a good player and has the potential to be a great player and did have a big effect on what the Steelers did last year. He just happens to think that the guy maybe was resting on his laurels, and that's why he's not playing right now. And by the way, the thing that actually gives him credence is the way the Steelers have handled it, right? I mean, obviously they don't think Broderick Jones has improved, because if they did, he'd be playing right now. They drafted him to be their starting left tackle. That's what Omar Khan said before they got to Latrobe. So I'm sorry, Chris. The last thing I'll say on what Hoke said here is, I don't think it's just his eyes. I think it's his ears too. I think people, when he's at training camp and he's watching and he's around these coaches, I think they're probably telling him the same thing. I think he's a conduit for getting that kind of information out there.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Getting the information out there, maybe, but is it like to the end of, sort of in a way, explaining their rationale, or is it they're hoping Jones hears it? Jones doesn't strike me as the guy. Some of these guys do. We know this. You especially know this. I think you probably have a list of names of guys who listen to sports talk in town. I feel like Cam is a pretty reliable guy who will listen to the show.
I can think of a quarterback who used to listen all the time.
Yeah. I can think of a quarterback's family members who were not fans of mine as a result of that.
Of course, we're talking about Bruce Gradkowski.
Well, the St. Bernard, St. Teresa rivalry was another, you know, whole thing there with, well, no, that was Del Sardo. Anyway.
I saw another member of the Del Sardo troop last night. They're everywhere, the Del Sardos.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, anywho, a couple of different things. I don't think Jones, if they're trying to get the message out through the media because they want Jones to hear it that way, that would matter, because I don't think Jones strikes me as a sports talk listener. Maybe I'm wrong. I also don't think, I think Chris's words today, sort of responding to some of the criticism of his comments, I honestly think it's one of those things that if you were to read a transcript of what he said and hear it and, like, just read it out, it might sound somewhat harsh. But hearing him say it, I didn't really feel like it was an attack at all. Even the tone didn't sound attacking. The tone sounded like a coach would use if he's trying to get through to a guy he knows is good and knows there's way more out there, or a teacher getting through to a student that they know has more to offer in the classroom or could, like, apply themselves more. And that's different. You've heard it when a guy thinks that a particular player might be talented, but is just total dog mentality and not in a good way. This felt more like a chiding when I heard it than it did anything else. That's how I took it as the A number one Broderick Jones fan.
When you start to criticize guys for things that are not black and white, that get into their headspace, their mentality, their effort, their focus, things like that. My opinion, if you work for a team or you're affiliated with a team and you do that, you better be pretty damn well sure that what you're saying is consistent with what the team thinks. Like, if John Wehner went on the air and said, O'Neal Cruz is uninterested. He doesn't look like he's interested right now.
Mm-hmm.
If John says that, or Greg Brown or somebody says that, and they're on their own with that, and the team doesn't agree, they're going to get reprimanded big time for it.
Correct.
Because it's a pretty big claim.
It's a big statement to make.
So,
it makes it personal.
So, right. So, if Chris, you know, just to take people behind the scenes here, if Chris was not doing, like, the quote-unquote official Steelers television postgame show with Bob and was just on our airwaves or said that on a podcast or said that on his own show, then I would think, all right, he thinks he can say it and there are no consequences for it. What are they going to do? Mm-hmm. Ban him from going to games?
Yes.
But the show is called the Steelers Extra Point Show.
Correct.
It's got the Steelers branding on it.
Yes.
The Steelers post it to their website.
It's messaging.
It's approved. It's their product, exactly.
It's team-approved messaging.
It's just like when Bob Labriola said those things about Chase Claypool and how they thought Chase Claypool might have, like, the diva gene in him. It made everybody stand up and pay attention to it because it was coming from the Steelers website.
And when Labs writes something, regardless of what it is, you can reliably assume that it is whatever team power broker, whether it's Art Rooney or the GM or Mike Tomlin, getting their message out.
If Chris calls out a defensive lineman for horrible play and the Steelers disagree, Chris can say, all right, let's put the tape on and you tell me where I'm wrong. He's saying something that is immeasurable. It's a...
unquantifiable.
Exactly.
It's a vibe.
So I have to think when he says those things, he says them with the assuredness that there are people over at the Steelers who think the same exact way as him.
Well, I think the fact that Broderick Jones didn't get the job at left tackle before even the Fautanu injury tells you that there were people over there that didn't feel that kind of way. When you really want somebody to take a job, you anoint them. It happens a lot with quarterbacks, like Bryce Young. I was reading the story about, like, how Carolina messed him up, and it was that he got anointed the starter after one padless practice. If they really just thought Broderick Jones was ready, let's go, I think they would have benched. They would have just said, Dan, thanks for the couple of years as our starting left tackle. There's a reason we drafted this guy. You're second string now. Like, good luck. You might need to learn right tackle here, even though you don't think you can play it. But they never handed any of that to Broderick Jones. They consistently gave Dan Moore almost right of first refusal, and I think that says a lot.
Texas on the Edgar Snyder Associates fan text line. Russell Wilson is talking about his availability right now and his chances for getting back on the playing field. We will hear some of those comments. Also, Justin Fields preparing for another start. He's talking Roman Wilson on when he'll be back. All of those things between now and 6 o'clock. We are live at the Rivers Casino Sportsbook. You can come say hi to us. Follow us on, or excuse me. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for a half century. It is Thursday at 3:15. That means it's time to talk to Bob Pompiani, our co-host on the nightly sports call, 10:35 simulcast here on 93.7 The Fan, the sports director at Channel 2 going back to the early 1980s. Bob will be on the Extra Point Show Sunday following Steelers and Chargers. Is that a KDK Plus joint, or is that going to be on Channel 2, Bob?
No, that's on the mothership this week. Home opener, baby. Let's go.
Broderick Jones just told reporters, crap, I played bad. That's all it is at the end of the day. You F up, you get pulled. And said now he has a sense of urgency to be a better player. Bob, you sat next to Chris Hoke, both during the game watching Jones struggle and then when Chris said that Jones looked uninterested in training camp. Give us your thoughts on what's happening to the Steelers' benched offensive lineman.
Yeah, I just think it's the number one pick who we all expected to be the franchise left tackle. I mean, that's what they expected after they, you know, moved up to get him, and it's just not been that easy. And, you know, you can look at it and say, well, coaches have made it hard for him because they keep deferring to Dan Moore. Well, maybe it's because, and Chris has expressed this too on our show, that he's just not playing as well as he should, and they're going to go with a guy who's playing better. And so they've tried to move him over to right tackle. Last year he did okay there for a while, but at the end of the year it started to go the other way. So I just think he's trying to find an opportunity that he can, you know, raise his level of play. And Chris was adamant about him, you know, not being tuned in enough, not focused enough during training camp. And I think that's probably an accurate assessment of what's going on. I don't know if that's a case of him just thinking, because I'm a number one pick where I was taken, and you know, that grants me special exemption to be the starting left tackle. Dan Moore, you have to give him credit, like him or not. He keeps on putting out, you know, decent performances, much better than what we've seen from Jones at this point.
Bob, you have a window and a relationship with Mike Tomlin, a window into his thinking maybe. You do the show with him, obviously. You know him better than Pony or I does. We always try to parse how he talks at his Tuesday press conference. How did you interpret the way he answered questions about Broderick Jones? What was your just thinking on like the idea that Jones is in Tomlin's doghouse? Did you hear what he had to say? Did you observe Tomlin there and come away with the same feeling?
No, I really don't think that's the case at all. I think that may be perception of what's going on, Chris, but I really believe that he wants the best for me. He wants him to, you know, but he's not in a position at this point to just give him a job if he's not performing, you know, as he should. Now, there are those who believe, and I kind of understand this because there's part of me that believes it, that he's better at left tackle. That's what he was drafted to do, so why not give him more of a run over there and see? Maybe that should have been the case in the preseason a whole bunch more. I don't know, but I think eventually this whole thing will sort out. We'll know at the end of this year, because right now I don't believe Dan Moore has an extension beyond this year. So at this point, okay, so they didn't do anything with him, obviously, you know, once the season started, so that window closed and it won't open again until later. And if it ever opens again, you wonder where it would lead. But I don't know it'll go to an extension. They have Broderick Jones money already invested in him, and I got to believe it's in their best interest to put him there. But it's not going to be a situation where they're just going to give him a job if he's not working and producing as hard as the guy in front of him.
Is Bob Papiani a Dan Moore believer?
I'm a Dan Moore believer in that he, you know, he was a guy who did not, when he first came in here, he and Kendrick Green both were kind of thrown into it. And I thought it was a little bit much for those guys where they were drafted. I'm an admirer, admiring from the point of view that he's had to stave off all these number one picks coming in here. He's, you know, if you ever got to talk to him, guys, he's a really, really thoughtful person and has a great attitude about what he's doing, I think. And I think that serves him well for what he's trying to do. And he's also very helpful with those other two young guys. I think they respect that from him. So there's a lot of respect and admiration on his behalf. Now, can they get better overall performance? I think that's what they have in mind when they've drafted the two guys. But I give him credit. You know, he's not only you know, stuck around, he's fended off these guys. And, you know, and then Dotson's the other kind of guy. When he came in, I thought, man, that's going to be hard for him. The one guy who didn't was Green, and he was just overmatched at that position, I thought. But Dotson's turned out to be a pretty good player, cashed in, so who knows what Dan Moore's going to get in the future.
Bob, Brian Batko, we like his work a lot over at the PG. He had a chat today, and one of his interpretations of how Tomlin spoke about Broderick Jones and Tomlin saying straight away, we want him to get out there and be on the field and we want him to play. He took that to mean that Dan Moore, despite all that he's done maybe to impress the coaches and to be on their good side, that he still might have a pretty short leash. Would you agree with that sentiment? Do you think if Dan Moore has a stinker of a game here, that his starting spot becomes pretty tenuous pretty quickly?
I think probably yes, because, again, they have a lot invested, and they know what the upside is on Broderick Jones. You know, I like you, Chris, I believe, and I think I'm right by this. When this happened, I thought that was a great pick for the Steelers. I still do. I'm not going to just shut that down.
Yes, I sang
think it's a great pick.
I paraded around the building, like, singing to the tune of Rocky music, Broderick Jones's name, because that was the guy I wanted them to draft. So I put myself out there, not to the extent Pony did with Pickett, but, like, on my own scale of things, I put myself out there pretty good.
Yeah. No, I think if there's an opportunity that arises, they would do it. And then it's up to him to take it and run with it. And, you know, Dan Moore would understand, too. Again, he's a very level-headed kind of guy, and I think he would understand it. He's going to put his best effort out, and if it's not good enough, then he'll know what that is. And you have three tackles there, and one of them's a swing guy. He can't swing like the others can swing, so therefore he's kind of stuck in that position. If he doesn't do well, he'll be taken out, and Jones will move over there.
What grade would Bob Pompeiani give Arthur Smith through two games as Steelers offensive coordinator?
I'd have to give him a B+, I think, only because they've won. I mean, obviously, we all know, guys, that they cannot sustain this sort of performance on a regular basis to get no touchdowns and one touchdown and win games. That is just – that's a recipe for failure. So, I understood what they're trying to do, and I think Mike Tomlin has a big say in how they go about doing this. He's a big proponent of don't make mistakes. We win games if we get a plus side on a turnover. So – that works, but against better teams, I suspect it may not work because Kansas City can overcome a -2 in a turnover. Cincinnati can do the same when they're playing the way they are capable. So those kinds of teams, you still have to be able to match point for point. It's incomplete for now, but after two games, I'd have to give it a B plus, just because they won two games and they didn't make it easier on the other team to get points because the failure's on their side of the ball.
Do you think Mike has finally learned from some of these ugly playoff losses they've suffered that he can't always go this way with conservative offense? Do you think deep down he understands that for them to be a real threat, they're going to have to start scoring points or no?
Yeah, I think he obviously knows that when Roethlisberger was here, it wasn't so much that they scored a lot of points. The problem is they gave up a lot of points and they made too many mistakes. If he has a quarterback he believes in, I think you're going to see them do what they have to do. I think ever since Roethlisberger, it's been kind of tiny steps trying to prevent disasters. And, maybe that, affects quarterbacks to the point where Kenny Pickett would be, he's a guy who I think is better served probably, going out, running away out of the pocket, throwing, just more of a workload from that point of view for him. But they were so concerned with just not making mistakes. And ever since Roethlisberger has gone, this is what we've seen. And we see it even now with Fields. So I give him credit. They reduced turnovers because he was a turnover machine. But again, at some point, you have to throw a lot of touchdowns. And last week, let's face it, he had one. He could have had two. He should have had two because that was a bad call on the pick.
Bob, before we let you run, Austin Bechtold, you know him, the producer of the Midday
City
Show. Yeah, the City Limits. Joe Starkey's trying to use the radio show to solicit dates and to try to set Austin up with a girlfriend. A, do you think that's a good idea? And do you think that Austin will find success in finding the love of his life through Starkey's Cupid-like
ways? No. I'm an old-fashioned guy when it comes to that pony. You got to go out and survey the field yourself. You can't do it through websites. You can't swipe left. You can't rely on radio. You can't rely on Joe, of all people. I don't know. No, I wouldn't do that. He's got to go out and just, fluff the hair up, get a good club and shirt, go out there, let people know what he does.
And, how about this one, Bob? I think he needs to learn how to dance. I think if he were to learn how to dance, that is something that always impresses eligible bachelorettes out there.
No question about it. I think women respect that. They know you're confident then if you get out there and you show that you can move on the dance floor. Absolutely, I would do that. I was talking to him the other day about facial hair, more so. I don't know what he would look like with a beard, but, that could be an option, too. That's an in thing these days.
I mean, is he able to grow facial hair?
He has a great baby face.
He has a great head of hair, but he has a very much a baby face, Bob. I don't know if that might take him like a year to grow facial hair.
It might, but then again, it may come in, like you're looking at a cornfield from an aerial drone shot. I don't know what that would look like, though. So.
All right, Bob.
You'd have to give that a try and see what the results are.
Great stuff. Thank you, Bob. We'll talk next week.
All right. See you. Have a good day.
Happy Annie, everybody. All right. Russell Wilson officially limited at practice today. You'll hear from him in a few minutes. Also, an update on Justin Herbert's practice participation for the Chargers as he missed yesterday with his ankle injury. It's 3:30 on a Thursday. That means it's time for Pony and Mueller Power Rankings. Earlier today, as we are wont to do, we were watching a Steelers-Chargers game from 40 years ago, and Mark Malone and the Steelers offense put up 52 points on Dan Fouts' Chargers. It was the most points ever scored by a Chuck Knoll-coached football team, believe it or not. And this spawned the following PM team power rankings. Best quarterbacks to play for either the Steelers or Chargers. Now, as a clarification here, because Russell Wilson has not technically played a game for the Steelers yet, he is ineligible. But anyone else who has been a quarterback, who has appeared in a regular season game for either team, is eligible. The Chargers have never won a Super Bowl, but they have a great list of former quarterbacks. They have...
Pony.
Probably what?
Well, I'm just, I was going to say, you're setting this up, and I think you're ready for a Mulsey oversight. And if you let me name the first name that we can submit
well,
and kick around.
I put together an order here. Here's how we'll do it. I will name number one ranked guy.
Uh-huh.
Then you will name the number two ranked guy.
Uh-huh.
Then Donnie will name number three. Then it'll come back to me for four and five. And then Donnie will have the right as the last guy to make one alteration to the list.
Okay.
Move somebody up, throw somebody out, and put somebody else in.
All right,
in.
So you're right. Okay, sure. I get it? Not really, but sure.
My number one. Number one quarterback to play for either the Steelers or Chargers.
Yeah, I know who it's going to be.
Johnny Unitas.
Yeah, I knew that. See, you thought that I was going to forget he played for the Chargers to end his career.
40 years old.
Yeah. I knew you were going to do it. I knew you were going to do it.
Russell Wilson has the potential
to be. He was absolutely stank for the Chargers.
What
he was
year
horrible.
Was it?
1973.
That's wild.
Think Bob Labriola could be listening to us right now, very proud that we have recognized Johnny U?
I think that Russell Wilson has the potential to be one of those guys where it's like, oh, my God, I completely forgot that he was in Pittsburgh for a year. Oh, my God, I forgot that Jerry Rice was in Seattle and Franco Harris was a Seahawk. And, oh, my God, Joe Namath played for the Rams.
Who is the all-time version of that guy?
Played for the Cardinals.
Well, Emmitt Smith broke the all-time rushing record when he was there in Arizona, did he not? Didn't he do it against Dallas?
Yes. No.
I thought he did.
Yes,
yeah.
I thought he already had the record with Dallas.
I could have swore he broke a record with them. I'm trying to think of who another truly great example of a wait, he played. I mean, to me, Dion with the Ravens is kind of like that.
It is. That's a good one.
Dion with the Ravens is a funny one.
T.O. had a few at the end.
T.O. with the Bengals is a very funny. You could do a lot of the ones with T.O. It has to be somebody, though, preferably, who played basically their whole career with one team and then just stapled on a bizarre tour of duty.
Ballsy, who's two?
I got to go Bradshaw here. I don't think there should be any argument either. Like, the guy won four Super Bowls, played in a completely different era. I know your Johnny U argument is partly based on don't look at the stats. The guy played in a completely different time period for the NFL. Bradshaw wasn't exactly playing in air raid offenses. He won four Super Bowls. He also tended to play his absolute best in the biggest moments for them. The biggest games, they wouldn't have all four of them if Bradshaw hadn't played as well as he did in the majority of them, especially later when they had turned into more of a pass-oriented offense. I'm going Bradshaw here, and I don't even think it's controversial.
You don't think putting him ahead of Drew Brees or Ben Roethlisberger is at all controversial?
I don't think it should be.
I think it's very controversial.
All right. You always think things I say are controversial, and then you have very convoluted statistical arguments to back up your point, and then I just tell you you're wrong.
Donnie, who is the third best quarterback to suit up for either the Steelers or Chargers?
I'm putting Big Ben right ahead of Drew Brees. I had these for a while, like, slashed out. Like, Unitas, I had him easy number one. I actually did have Bradshaw number two.
Easy number one. Easy number one. None of us have ever seen Johnny Unitas play football. I was going to put him up there and put him number one just to make Pony happy that I remembered that he played for the Chargers. None of us ever watched a game he played live.
Never watched a game Bradshaw played live, and you just put him ahead of Ben.
I'm just saying, though, Johnny U played, like, truly different. Do I?
Do you like him?
I give him his respect. I say he's an easy, obvious Hall of Famer.
You said there was no debate that Bradshaw was better than him. I think that's pretty
twice as many titles.
When I made a comment about Dan Fouts not having any titles today, you gave me the Trent Dilfer argument, and now you're using the title argument again?
I think it absolutely should only be used in extreme cases like that. Like, if somebody were to tell you Dilfer's better than Marino, you disqualify them. But I don't think it's at all controversial that a guy who played in an era where quarterbacks were getting suplexed by guys like Turkey Jones and were calling their own games on the field, I don't think that he should get dinged for that.
Why Ben ahead of Breeze, Donnie?
I mean, I just obviously personal bias for one. But I
like that you just get right out in front of it.
Oh,
and
I
say,
actually
just bias.
I think I'm just going to go with the fact that I like one guy more than the other.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Breeze is an all-time great quarterback. Don't get me wrong. But I am just going to go with Ben. The two Super Bowls over one. Neither guy has a league MVP either, so you can't like make that individual argument for Breeze. And we know people love making the dome argument, and that's where Drew Brees really made his money. He hasn't really remembered. I know this isn't the exercise, but he played majority of his career in a lot easier climates, and I'm giving Ben the edge. But I had them slashed out. Like, I had those two, like, Ben
slash Brees. So was your top of the heap Unitas and Bradshaw?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
so Donnie even puts Bradshaw ahead of Ben.
Yeah, so don't even bother arguing about it. Two-thirds majority rules.
All right, I'm going to put Breeze four then. I would have him higher, but that's neither here nor there. The guy, in my opinion, is the most accurate passer in NFL history. I think if it was a game of darts, football style, I think he'd beat everyone who ever played the game, Brady included.
You and I actually are in agreement on this.
He is the Greg Maddux of NFL quarterbacks.
I don't think it's dramatically... He's, like, dramatically ahead of Ben. And I can actually understand, if you're in Roethlisberger's shoes, why you would get jammed up. Because I think he does. That people consider Breeze a better quarterback. But the longevity... I also think he deserves... Here's something else that doesn't get said about him a ton. He's a good athlete. Anybody that plays in the NFL has to be a good athlete in traditional terms. He was maybe 6 feet tall. To be that dominant from the pocket at that height... And that accurate, I think, is like borderline wizardry.
All right, who's five, Malzi?
I mean, it gets late early out there. I will go Fouts, though. I think Fouts belongs over Rivers. The Steelers, we love Cordell. Cordell, a friend of the show. He's the third best quarterback in team history for the time being.
How about Bobby Lane?
I'm not doing that. I think Fouts is a Hall of Famer, first off. Fouts also, I think, was the quarterback at the forefront of a revolutionary turn in offense, the Air Coryell. There's a run there where Fouts has never thrown. It starts in 79 and extends to 81. Dan Fouts, till that point, has been a good quarterback, but by no means what I would call great, right? He's only thrown for 200 yards a game on average for one season, and that was where he only played four games. He'd never topped 3,000 yards. Ironically enough, in 78, he had 2,999 yards, okay? And then here is a three-season run, basically in his physical prime. 4,082 yards, led the league. 4,715 yards, led the league. 4,802 yards, led the league. Also led the league that year with 33 touchdown passes. The next year, the strike year, was on pace to throw for 5,000 yards. 2,883, and he had 17 touchdowns. He absolutely was the guy who I think was the player who revolutionized passing in the NFL. He walked so Dan Marino, for example, could run.
Len Dawson also was eligible here because he did start his career with the Steelers and did appear in games. Donnie, you have the last word here. Is there any move you want to make, add someone to the list and take someone off, or move someone up a spot? You're allowed to do that one time.
So I didn't even think of Dawson, so that was a good pull there. I didn't even have him on my radar for this. I did have Rivers slash Fouts for that number five spot, but I think the historical context there that Chris brings up is very important. Like, he was one of the players that truly revolutionized the position. It wasn't just a dude who threw for, you know, 2,000 yards back in the 80s, and he threw a million interceptions, and he threw for, like, seven touchdowns. He was one of the first quarterbacks that actually looked like a quarterback that could be playing right now. A quarterback that could have played in the 2000s, in the 2010s. Rivers, the numbers are better on his end. The counting numbers are better on his end. And don't get me wrong, I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame at some point one day too. So I have those guys in a pretty close to even keel. Rivers, you know, 11 career playoff wins. That's far and away the Chargers' best in team history. but neither guy has a Super Bowl. Both guys struggled in the playoffs historically. I mean, I know he just gave the playoff wins, but it's not like they got it done in the biggest moment, so it's hard to really give either guy the edge there. But I do think historically I'm going to go Fouts.
All right. 5-1, Dan Fouts, Drew Brees, Big Ben, Terry Bradshaw, Johnny U. Five best quarterbacks to have played for the Steelers or Chargers. Justin Herbert did not get consideration by us.
And an absolutely ridiculous late submission for random guys who played 1 year, because that's why Johnny U's number one here, who played 1 year. Tim Brown, 15 or 16 years with the Raiders. I had no idea this happened.
The Bucks?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pony. I don't think it's wrong that people are like, oh, he appeared in 15 games with the Bucks in 2004.
Charlie remembers that.
He's a Buccaneers fan. Of